Today I'm going to talk about coins. All the men can probably reach in your pocket and pull out coins. Ladies, you can reach in your purse and pull out coins. You know, somebody asked me one time, would you rather have dollars or cents? I'd rather have cents, S-E-N-S-E. Because if I have cents, I can make dollars. But they were talking about C-E-N-T-S, but if you have enough of them, you can make dollars too. But today we're going to talk about coins. And you know, coins have played a very important part in man's history. It goes back thousands and thousands of years. And in the earliest sense, coins, as you see on the screen here, were at one time made of precious metal, such as gold and silver. I actually have a small collection of silver coins that my dad collected back in the early 1900s and mid-1900s, and they're all very interesting to look at, and we have them in a storage house, and I don't get to go out and look at them very often, but they're interesting to look at, particularly one that he had, and it's a 1921 silver dollar. Here's a picture of it. And if you notice something unusual about this particular coin, the wings on the eagle is folded. And the reason for that, this coin was issued in 1921 in honor of the end of World War I. They folded the wings of the eagle, which is generally spread in flight. So to fold the wings is a symbol of peace. So I thought that was very interesting, that this is probably the most popular silver dollar coin that there is in the U.S. Mint. And I have one, and I'm very proud of it. And it's a very beautiful coin, and what it means is a wonderful thing, the meaning of peace. We remember, no doubt, the state headquarters that came out back in the 80s, in the 90s, I guess it was the 90s, where each state had on the back of a coin something important about their state. I think Georgia, it was the peach. In Alabama, it was the cotton gin, you know. And you could collect coins over the years. It was a collection that ran from 1997 to 2008, collecting the different statehood coins. And, you know, my kids were young at the time, and we started doing that. We bought the big board, the big cardboard board that you could put the coins in for each state, you know, and would represent each state. And I don't know whatever happened to that thing. It kind of disappeared. I guess we got tired of fooling with it because it was a several-year process to fill that thing full. They still make different backside of quarters now that you can collect, and you'll see a statehood quarter every now and then when you go through your change. But that was an interesting thing. And I always wanted the colored version. They came out with a colored version. Those were more than a quarter apiece, though. And I wouldn't buy one. I was being a little cheap and wouldn't get that collection. But it was fun to collect those particular coins. You know, coins have two sides. They have they've always had two sides. And they always have different markings on the sides. We refer to it as heads and tails. Heads, of course, are usually a prominent president, citizen, someone of importance on the front side, and the back side is usually either the American Eagle as the quarter has on it, or perhaps maybe a structure like the penny. The penny used to have Lincoln Memorial, and now it has something else. But it's usually some structure that would help you think of the government. And but there have always been two sides. Another interesting thing about the coin is that many decisions have been made from a coin. Let me back up. It's not working right with me. Many decisions have been made by the flip of a coin. Who's going to get to go first? Who's going to get the largest amount? Who gets the job and who gets left out? All these things are many times decided by the coin. You know, the phrase, "there is always two sides to every coin," is a very familiar phrase, and we use it quite a bit. If there's something that we don't agree with, and that's the first thing out of our mouth, well, there's two sides to that coin. And that's what I want to do this morning. I want to use this analogy. There are always two sides to a coin. And I want us to discuss this from a different angle. I want to look at it from a spiritual standpoint. how coins can be two-sided and our lives can be two-sided. Other things can be two-sided. For example, words. Words can be a two-sided coin. Words can speak in two different ways. They speak in many ways, but two in particular. Words can carry meanings that will be good. Words such as approval, love, encouragement, blessings, kindness, happiness, considerate, can come from the mouth. And at the same time, words that are bad can come from the same mouth. Words such as hatred, suspicion, anger, accusations, gossip, cursings, sarcasm, and slander. Words can be hypocritical, in essence, saying one thing but meaning something else. Words can give life, and words can bring death. If you've ever stood before a judge, you may have heard the word guilty or not guilty. And whatever came from the judge's mouth was the final word. Either you are guilty or you are free. The Bible refers to this in many ways, and I have two passages I want to share with you where words can be used either both as good or as bad. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. You know, James talked a lot about the tongue and how powerful it was. It's like the rudder of a ship or the bit in a horse's mouth. Two very powerful things, the ship and the horse. But yet we who are much smaller, much weaker, and much more insignificant can move those great animals and that great structure with a very small helm, a very small rudder, a very small bit. Just like the tongue is one of the smallest members of our body, but it boasts of great things. And it can do so much good in the world. It can also do so much damage. Home conflicts begin with words. Government conflicts begin with words. National, international conflicts begin with words. That small little thing that comes out of that little tongue. How powerful it really is. The other one is from James chapter 3. Out of the mouth can proceed blessing or cursing, he said. My brethren, these things ought not be so. We need to train our member in our mouth to say the right thing, to use kindness, to use love, and not the hateful things that it is capable of doing. You know, Peter was a wonderful example of this. Peter is the one that gave the great answer when Jesus said, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." He was the disciple of Jesus, and he was very happy to be a disciple of Jesus, and he knew who Jesus was. But on the night of the betrayal, that same tongue, coming from that same man, said, "I do not know this man. This man that I once called the Son of God, I don't know who he is." And he added cursings with it to back up what he was saying. So here you have it. The tongue can do good, but the tongue can do evil. We must be very careful with our words. We need to remember what Jesus said in Matthew 12, verse 36 and 37. "But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." Words are a two-sided coin. It can either do good or it can do evil. Another thing that can be a two-sided coin is wealth. Now, you know, money, wealth, riches is not an evil thing. It's not an evil thing to have a lot of money, to have a lot of property, to have a lot of stocks and bonds. There's nothing wrong with that. Jesus even gives an illustration with the element of money at the day of the time, the talent. And he gave men, he tells the story of a man giving out talents to be used, to be prospered, to grow. Two did well, one did not. The two that did well was reimbursed. They were rewarded. And the one who did not was punished. The point is, we need to learn how to use our riches, our wealth, our money. So, but it's not bad in itself. But believe me when I say that wealth is a two-sided coin. It can be used to improve one's life. It can be used to help make our society a better place in which to live. Or it can generate pride in our heart. And it can cause one to elevate himself above other people and take from them. And can even allow him to put himself above God. The problem is that so many people move toward the negative part of wealth when they get it. You know, when we don't have it, we can think about all the wonderful things. We can think about all the good that we can do, you know. So many people say, well, if I could win the publisher's clearinghouse, my church would be rich because I'd give so much to the church. Would you? Would you really? That's because you don't have it. If you had it, you would probably and may think differently about it. I have tried every time they let me to win the publisher's clearinghouse. I thought, sure, Steve Allen would call me last week on the 31st, and he didn't. No, Steve Harvey, I'm sorry. He was going to give away $5,000 a week for the rest of my life, and I was waiting on it. And it didn't happen. So you know what I did? I signed up again. He's going to call me next month for sure. No, he won't. I doubt that very seriously. What you going to do with that money? I have tried to win Jaguar cars. I have tried to win new houses. I have tried to win hundreds of thousands of dollars. Hadn't happened yet, but when it does, well, I won't have a lot of money. We can say that, can't we, when we don't have it? But when it's ours, we may look at it differently. Because it is a two-sided coin. The Bible, therefore, gives us many warnings about wealth and how it can hurt us more than it can help us. First one in 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning with verse 8. Paul said, having food and clothing with these, we shall be content, or should be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love, there it is. We misquote that. We always say money is the root of all evil. No, it's not. Listen to it. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from their faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So Paul is telling us the same thing. There's nothing wrong with having money. There's nothing wrong with being rich. It is if you love it more than you love God and more than you love your neighbor and more than you don't. If you don't put God first, then love's not right. Then he goes on to say, verse 17, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty. Can wealth make you haughty? Oh, you better believe it. Look what I've got. Look what I can do. You don't have this, do you? Oh, yeah, we see that happening all the time. Not to think of uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold of eternal life. God, what are you saying here? We need to use our money in such a way that will help us get to heaven. Is that possible? Yes, it is. But we've got to do it the right way. We need to think about something that Solomon said. Proverbs 23 and verse 4. Labor not to be rich. Now, we all work to get a paycheck, don't we? We expect it. We work all of our lives. We retire. We expect to get a retirement check. We expect that. But Solomon is saying here, don't labor to be rich. And that means that we should be working for something higher, for something that is more important. And Paul just told us what it was here in 1 Timothy chapter 6, that we may lay hold of eternal life. Because I'm going to tell you, my friends, when you walk out into eternity, and you walk out into eternity without God, that dollar bill's not going to be worth much to you. It's not going to be worth anything to you. So we need to think about that. Yes, wealth can be a two-sided coin. Then, conflicts can be a two-sided coin. You know, conflicts, like coins, always have two sides, or they may have several sides, but they'll always have at least two. Two different perspectives about what we want or what we think we need, and it opposes someone else's thinking. There are at least two needs in trying to solve a conflict. One expects one thing, one expects something else, and so we have to negotiate, or sometimes it comes to battle, to see who's going to win. There's always more than one. And here's a thought. There is almost never, never a situation where one side is 100% right and the other side is 100% wrong. I made this statement here a few weeks ago in another one of my lessons, that in my 35 plus years of church work, I've done a good bit of counseling. And I have never brought people into my office where one person was always right and the other person was always wrong. Now, it might be that there was one person who did the wrong thing, but there's usually some coercion or some influence or some activity from the other side that helped to promote this wrongdoing. No one is always and all the way right. As the sermon suggests, there are always two sides. Never one always right side. You know, one of the biggest causes for conflict is that people will not sit back and look at the whole picture before they start drawing conclusions. We hear or we see the one thing that we do not like, and we close our ears and eyes to everything else. Because, oh, he said that, or she did that, and I just ain't going to have any part of it, and I don't care what else is said. And that's it. They draw the line there. And they have no idea what the story really is. You ever watch a game show, and you have to push the button when you know the answer, and the guy gets halfway through the question, and you push the button, and you didn't hear the whole question? You're not going to get that answer right, because you haven't heard the whole thing. You need to know the whole thing. So many people fail. Solomon had something to say about people like this. Proverbs 18 and verse 13. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. So we have to be careful. And another thing that makes it difficult is when we pull somebody in the middle. Boy, that's the worst place to be. You don't need to be in the middle of a two-sided argument. It's like you don't need to be in the middle of a tug of war. Because you're going to find that both sides have their needs and you're expected to go one way or the other. Both sides believe they possess the truth. And like I said earlier, there's probably some truth in both sides. So that makes it harder for the person in the middle to decide which way to go. Both sides have developed a negative attitude and negative feelings toward the person on the other side, and they expect you to side with them, and the other side expects you to side with them, and the one side is always looking for a way to make the other side feel uncomfortable and to feel like he's losing. And there you are in the middle of all that. Folks, if you get in an argument with someone, don't pull somebody in the middle. that's wrong. What is really needed is to figure out a way to overcome the conflict. And yes, it can be done. And the first thing, and nobody likes to do this, me included, when I get mad, I want to fire. I want to yell. I want to shoot. But I need to calm down. You need to stop and recollect your thoughts, your ideas, and try to, as I said earlier, put the whole thing together. First of all, we need to focus on the problem and not start thinking about things that has happened in the past with this person. Oh, don't you remember what they done this? They done this 10 years ago. They done something else 10 years ago, made me mad then, and now they've done this, they made me mad again. And they can't let anything go. I've had people here come up to me and say, oh, so-and-so, they done this 20 years ago. Well, who cares? That's 20 years ago. It has nothing to do with you now. Move on. Put it aside. And put it away. Don't attack personalities. Oh, I know how that person, they just think they've got to have their way in everything. And we use that against them. Secondly, you seek only the truth. Don't try to make it worse than it is. Don't try to fabricate things to make it worse, and don't listen to fabrications. You know, fabrication is what put Jesus on the cross. The lies that was made at the court on that day put Jesus on the cross. Because they wouldn't let it go, and they kept on with the lies. They kept on with the shouting. And finally, Pilate said, fine, have at it. Is that what you want? Is that how you want to win an argument? And I know this is the last thing on everybody's mind. Look for a solution that is going to solve the needs of both sides. When you're in an argument with someone, the last thing on your mind is to do something that's going to benefit them. Isn't it? But we need to remember one thing when we develop that thought. We need to remember that the only way to make God happy is to make it right all the way around. Matthew chapter 5, verse 23. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar, and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. You know what Jesus is telling us here? Your gift is worthless if your heart isn't right. Your gift is worthless if you have people who have all against you and you have people who you have all against. And basically what he's saying is God's not going to take your gift. He's not going to accept your gift. Until you make this right. So you need to make it right. And not just right for you, but right for everyone concerned. And I'm going to tell you, friends, you can't do that with a flip of a coin. When two-sided coins are presented to us, we need to be cautious. We need to be careful. We need to be sure that we are handling this situation godly. You thought I was going to say correctly, didn't you? We need to handle the situation godly. Because if we handle it godly, it will be correct.
We don't need to make life-changing decisions by flipping a coin. And that is especially true with spiritual matters.
I want to tell you this morning, my friends, don't let the flip of a coin decide your Christianity. Don't sit here today flipping that mental coin around and around, deciding, do I want to be a Christian today? Do I want to come back to God today and put away the sins that I have committed after becoming a Christian? Don't do that. If you're outside the body of Christ, it's going to take more than the flip of a coin to decide I'm going to be a Christian. It's going to take faith. It's going to take obedience. And you've got to have both to be a child of God. And Christian, if you've walked away from God, it's going to take more than the flip of a coin for you to come back to God. It's going to take confession of fault. It's going to take prayer to God before you can come back. We're here this morning to help you do either one. If you need to respond to the invitation, please come while we stand and sing.